Let's say someone asks you, why don't y'all have instrumental music? If we can't answer, or we're hesitant to answer, what are the possible ramifications or results of that? Nothing?
Giving them an opportunity to, if we can't defend why we don't have instrumental music in our worship, why we just say, because that's just what we don't do, that opens the door for them to be able to excuse other things that are not authorized in the Bible to do in their worship service.
Okay, that's a good comment that Dawn made. I don't know if you heard it. She said, if you can't give good reason why we do not use mechanical instruments of music in worship, it opens the door for them to practice other things that may not be found in the New Testament or that are different from what we do. Are there any other ramifications? Let's suppose some of your parents have children or grandparents, and somebody asks you and your children or grandparent or grandchildren are there, and you can't answer. What are the possible results of that?
Apostasy.
What?
Apostasy.
Apostasy. Could be. What might they think about your belief in vocal music?
Maybe wrong. If you can't articulate it, if you can't give it a sense of what you believe, then how do you know if you're right?
Right. If you can't at least make some reasonable defense of what you're doing, well, maybe mom and dad just do this because Grandpa did it, or they don't really know what's wrong with it. So what happens when your child or grandchild goes to college or marries somebody? And this happens, folks. And so we talked this morning about, does it make any difference which church you attend or where you had your fellowship? And we listed a number of things. And obviously, if we're concerned about worshiping in a way that's according to God's commandments and not men's traditions, it makes a big difference. And where would you go to? What is a passage you could go to show that that's very important? Matthew 15. That's right. We talked about that this morning. And so it can be a very important thing. Now we're looking at arguments for instrumental music. But before you ever get to that, if you're not maybe as prepared to answer the arguments for instrumental music. And somebody said, well, why do you use instrumental music? Where can you start that's very simple?
The eight witnesses.
Well, I read my Bible, and here, let's read it together. Let's see what kind of music either Christians practiced or were told to practice in their worship to God. And what you can do is you can take this first verse, Acts 16:25. How can you find the other eight verses? If you use something called a book-bound Bible, they still make those. They got paper in them. They're bound by bounding. And they have margins. And you can write a little note in there of the next verse of these eight verses. I do that with chaining verses, and I'll put like a kind of a circle, like a chain link around it. That tells me that's a chain verse. That tells me the next verse. So if you want to study with somebody, say, I can remember eight verses. Can you remember one? If you can get one of the eight, and you do all eight verses that way, and you just write your margin, the next in the chain. When you get to the last one, what do you put? The first one. So it doesn't make any difference. Which one of the eight you get, you'll have in your hand a tool to say, here's why. Look at this verse, this verse, this verse, this verse. So that's where we started, the eight witnesses, where the specific kind of music, singing, vocal music, was referred to. The passage in Hebrews 13 doesn't mention singing, but it does talk about worshiping with the fruit of lips. And so that's not playing a harp or a piano, that kind of thing. Okay, so that could be useful to you. It'd be a tool for in your arsenal as you go out and meet the world and these challenges, and it's something you can equip your children and grandchildren with. Okay, in our first class, we studied questions 1, 2, and 5. So question 1, the elders have approved it, and we talked about that, and that the elders were warned of apostasy among the eldership in Acts chapter 20. And therefore, they were told to be on guard, and if the elders are to be on guard, what about the members? They ought to be on guard. And so, because the elders say it's right, certainly doesn't make it right, does it? And then we talked about number two, Jesus doesn't care what kind of music as long as it's sincere. And we just mentioned Matthew chapter 15. We talked about the prayer that he taught us to pray. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Your kingdom come, meaning what? You rule in my heart. Your will be done on earth. May your will be done, will in heaven be done on earth. These are prayers of I'm going to submit to the divine will. And so it's not a matter of making up my own way of serving God or worshiping God, but what's the divine will? And we talked about that in our class. And we talked about Jesus' great commission. When he told the apostles to go preach the gospel, he preceded it with what statement? Matthew 28. What was the first thing he said? Our authority is given to me. Define authority for me. The right to rule. He has the right to rule. See, I love Jesus. I want to serve Jesus. He's my Savior. Well, he is your Savior. But he's also your King. He has the right to rule. As to how we worship, how we live, whether we marry or don't marry, whether we divorce or don't divorce, how we raise our children, whatever it may be. And when Paul wrote 1 Corinthians 14, he wrote some unpopular things there about how assemblies were to be conducted. Some things that some of the people in Corinth would not like because he told them they couldn't exercise their gifts. But in verse 37, he issued a warning. Do anybody remember what that warning was? About their attitude to what he wrote? Nobody remembers? All right, we'll look it up then. 1 Corinthians 14:37. Sir?
What has been written is from the commandments of the Lord.
That's right. These are the Lord's commandments. What if somebody in the car says, I'm a prophet, I don't accept that. What did Paul say about that in that verse?
Don't recognize him.
Or the King James Version said, if he's ignorant, let him be ignorant. That's a very powerful statement that what I read in 1 Corinthians 14 or Colossians chapter 2 to that church or Ephesians chapter 5, those are two of the verses in the chain, is authoritative. And if I'm going to serve the Lord Jesus Christ, I have to recognize the authority that he has and that he empowered the apostles and prophets to reveal. Okay, and then we talked about number 5. And somebody says, well, do you believe it's okay to use instrumental music at home when you worship God? You're going to listen to the Chuck Wagon Gang. Who knows what the Chuck Wagon Gang is? One. Yeah, I know it'd be people our age, Linda. My dad used to like to listen to them. Just listen, that's all he did. But in other words, you're going to listen to somebody sing instrumental music with a guitar or something else. Can I sing with them? And I'll tell you right now, brethren, they're divided on this. They say, yeah, you can do it at home, but not in worship. Is there any one of the 8 witnesses that might help us with that?
James 5:13.
All right, James 5:13. Is that about an assembly? No, it's a person cheerful. They want to thank God. They want to worship God. They want to say, I honor you. Any merry or cheerful, let him sing praises. Nothing about anybody else around. And so, and you can illustrate that there are things you can do at home that you don't do in the assembly with a chapter in the Bible you're very familiar with. And here's a clue to it. He said, do it at home. 1 Corinthians 11, that's right. You want to eat a common meal? Do that at home. There are things that are morally right, but are religiously wrong. And so, because you can do something at home doesn't mean you can do it in worship, but in this particular case, at least personally, I would feel very uncomfortable about doing something like that, even at home. All right, so that's what we covered briefly in our study last class. So we're going to pick up number three. Number three. This may be the one that you'll hear. So you read all your eight witnesses, and so they come back and they say, but the Bible never says you shall not have instrumental music. Does it? What's your answer?
It does not.
It does not. Now the question is, does that make it okay? Is it okay? Is it all right? So, turn to 1 Chronicles. If you don't remember this chapter, write it somewhere. It's a great chapter to illustrate what God means by His authority. To talk about the idea of when God's authority is specific, that you have to respect that. Let's suppose Stephen gives me his credit card. He says, "Hey, you know, I've not been feeling well, but I need a part for my car. I need a cabin gasket or filter. I mean, cabin filter. Would you go get me one?" I said, "Sure, Steve. I'll go get you one." "You want a cabin filter? Yeah. Please go buy me a cabin filter." So I take his card and I come back, and here's the cabin filter, and here's a new stereo to go in his car, and here's some fork tires, and I spent $1,500. Stephen, happy? "Look, Stephen, don't get upset. You didn't tell me not to buy those things." We understand this every day. If you specify, you do not authorize anything else. Now, if he said buy a cabin filter and he did not specify the brand, I'm at liberty to buy several brands. And so words and phrases can be specific and at the same time generic. Include things. "Go buy me a dog." What's specific about that statement? The kind of animal. What's generic about that statement?
The breed.
The breed. How big it is, whatever. See, a chihuahua, or I don't know why anybody would buy one, but a chihuahua, or, you know, Great Dane. But be that as it may, it sure does not authorize cats. But anyway, so specific and generic. So look at 1 Corinthians chapter 13. What did I say? I wanted to see if y'all were awake. Sure, it wasn't my mistake. 1 Chronicles 13. Thank you, Wally. 1 Chronicles 13. Okay, so, seems like I've talked about this in a sermon or something here recently. I was going back over this. Maybe I did. So, y'all will all... Huh?
You showed it last Sunday.
With this?
Yeah. Last Sunday.
Number three?
Yeah.
Not number three. You covered
1 Chronicles 13? Well, good. All I got to do is ask questions. So, David was going to carry the ark back to Jerusalem. Good or bad?
Good.
Good. They built a brand new cart. What does that show about the people?
They were sincere.
They wanted to do it in a way that would be honorable. You know. But, got problems on the way. What was it? Yeah, so the oxen stumble. Uzzah put out his hand to steady the ark. What happened to Uzzah? Got struck dead. Now, what was the problem with carrying the ark? Who cares if it gets there, what it means? What was the problem with carrying it on an ark?
Because when they were constructing the ark, he gave them specific instructions on how to carry it.
Gave them specific instructions. Since we studied it last week, y'all will know the answer to this. There are three specifics that we talked about. Y'all ready to tell me what they are? Very good. So the Levites were to carry it. Kohath, actually the Kohath of the Levites, not any Levite. And they were to carry it, not down here, but on their shoulders, using the poles that were in the rings of the ark. So it's a great example of when God specifies, just like when you specify. You know, if you give your child a credit card, say, go to the store for me and buy a loaf of bread and come back with 10 bags of candy, are you happy? No. And neither is God. We respect His authority. So that's a great passage. And you know the story then, since we talked about it last week. Always remember when you read chapter 13 to go to chapter 15. Because here David got it right. He got the message. And there's a little phrase in 15 and 2. Like in my Bible, I underlined it. Just it sticks out. No one is to carry the ark of God but the Levites. And then here's the little phrase. Starts with the word for. What difference does it make who carries it, man? There's people in Judah that could carry it. There's people in these other tribes that could carry it. What difference does it make, according to the next few words? The Lord chose. Look at that. When the Lord makes a choice, I better respect it. Now David got it. For the Lord chose. Now when you get to 13, this is why chapter 15 is so helpful. At the end of the verse, you have another for. Why did God make an outburst on us? For what? According to the ordinance. According to the law. Right. And so, when they finally did it right, at the end of verse 15, what is the qualifying statement that shows they did it right? At the end of verse 15. As Moses had commanded according to the word of the Lord. So they went and found Moses. Moses, what do we need to do? Carry this ark, right? That how they did it? When did David live? How many years before Christ? 1,000. When did Moses live? 1,500. So what is this business about Moses commanded? The scriptures. That's right. 500 years have passed. But those scriptures are authoritative. 2,000 years has passed since the New Testament. Said, man, that was old times. They're authoritative. And so you worship as the prophets or the apostles commanded according to the law. Yes, sir?
I have found, so I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second, that this passage doesn't always work.
Okay.
That's not an apples-to-apples comparison. When I'm using instruments of music and worship, I'm still singing, making melody in my heart to the Lord. So I'm still doing what is authorized according to the Scripture. Just have extra. So if they were to carry the ark on their shoulders, and it was the Levites that were supposed to carry them, but they decided to blow trumpets and everything, it's okay because I'm doing what the Lord authorized.
So you're singing, which the Lord authorized. And that's another matter. But anyway, you're singing as the Lord authorized. And you're carrying the ark on the poles, on the shoulders of the Levites. Is that right?
The Levites specified. I forget the name of the Kohath. The Kohath. So doing everything that the Bible...
Well, if you're carrying the ark, if the Kohites or Kohathites are carrying the ark on their shoulders with the poles, and they're singing...
Now, not them. Other people are playing trumpets as we're marching through the
city. What?
Other people are doing it.
Besides the Kohath. Well, then you're not doing what God said.
Doesn't say you can't.
No, I know it doesn't say you can't. What happened? Did that make it okay?
I'm following.
No, you're not, because you're not doing what Moses commanded according to the law. You've got the ark on a cart. Is that what Moses commanded according to the law?
I'm talking about doing exactly what this says they did in chapter 15, except for I'm going to have people in front of them blowing the horns. I'm doing everything that's specified.
So I'm missing you, Keith. I don't know how you say you're doing everything specified if the ark is on a cart.
It's not
on a cart. I'm saying in chapter 15, as David saw Moses and the ordinances, you got the Kohath Levites carrying the ark on their shoulders. Everything that makes it runs. play devil's advocate here. But David puts people in front blowing horns. I'm doing everything that was authorized.
I'm not using this to show what kind of music is we're authorized in the Old Testament. That's another topic. We're going to deal with that.
I'm not dealing with that either, but what I'm getting at is it's not just an apples to apples comparison. They're saying that in the New Testament, they're saying, well, music is just an addition to doing what I'm supposed to do.
Now, wait a minute. Stay with you. You're getting off on another topic. Our topic is if God does not forbid it, does that make it okay? That's all we're talking about right now.
Well, your example doesn't. Your example just shows that they did something different than what God specified. I'm doing the same thing that God specified and adding to it. That's what I'm trying to point out.
Adding to it, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
We'll talk about that. That's on the sheet. But that's not what we're talking about now. The question is, did God forbid it? Does this show if God did not forbid it that it's okay? No, it doesn't. It shows it's not okay. You don't have to have a prohibition. Now, we'll talk about aids and additions, but that's another point. And he's right. They may bring that up, so you need to be ready for that. We'll talk about that. So that's a good thing that he made. But that's not what we're looking at here. We're looking at this one statement that you might hear. God did not forbid it. You can prove by this story, unless I'm missing it, that because God didn't forbid it, doesn't make it okay. As far as carrying the ark. Am I correct about that?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I'm not arguing.
All right, well then. All right, good. All right. So, all right. Let's look at 1 Samuel 6:8. So there's something else about this story that's useful. Why did they choose to carry it on an ark in the first place? Look at 1 Samuel 6. We can't be certain about this, but this is possible. So back in the law, Exodus, Leviticus, they were told specifically how to carry it. Where did you get the idea of carrying the ark on a cart? So, here in 1 Samuel chapter 6 and verse 8, here we have the Philistines, and they want to return the ark. So they says, prepare now, take and prepare a new cart with two milch cows on which there's never been a yoke. Hitch the cows to the cart, take the calves home away from them, take the ark of the Lord, place it on the cart, etc. So that's how the Philistines moved the ark to get it back to Israel. Where do people get their idea? There was no mechanical instruments of music for the first several hundred years after the church was established. But then churches all over began to use them. Where'd they get the idea?
From other denominations.
Right. Watching other people. Here's what they did. And so somebody started it. Somebody else, well, they did it. They did it. They did it. That's how a lot of things happen, folks. There's a fellow by the name of Floyd Decker in 1940. She wrote an article about denominations and what they're doing. That it was unauthorized. I guess 10 years later, Churches of Christ had adopted many of those practices, celebrating Christmas and all kinds of stuff. We imitate the people around. That doesn't make it right. In fact, it can get us into trouble. Why did Israel want a king in the first place? Be like the nations. It got them in trouble. So it's not a matter of looking to what other churches do. Look, they got a big number. They got good people in it. Maybe. It doesn't make what they do right. The Philistines carried the ark back. Nobody was struck dead. That means God must approve. What a mistake. As we learn from 1 Chronicles 13 and 15. So, finding out how to worship, we don't learn from what other people do. Okay. Now, I want you to look at two passages with me together. Same time. Got more than one finger? So first start Matthew 28. All right. Here's where Jesus is commissioning the apostles. And look at verse 20. He said, after you baptize these people, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you. Now, this gets close to what Keith's talking about, but it's another point. Somebody says, okay, God says, saying, we are doing what God commands. Well, where did God command to use a guitar or piano? Well, he didn't, but we are doing what God commands when we sing. And we're back on this idea. He didn't forbid this other. So, hold your finger there. Now, who making this statement? Jesus Christ. What's his culture? What's his race? Huh? That's not his culture. What's his race? Jews. So he used Jewish language, Jewish thoughts. What kind of men is he speaking to? People in the United States?
Jews.
So it's a Jewish rabbi speaking to Jewish students. Correct? Is that correct? So would they interpret what he says in the light of the United States language in 2025?
No.
No. So holding your finger there, go back to Deuteronomy chapter 4. I want you to note the last phrase in the verse. Forget the first part right now. I just want you to note the last phrase. Verse 2. That you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God. Now look back at your verse. Teach them to observe all that I commanded you in Matthew 28:20. So he says, he's going to give them some instructions that they may keep the commandments of the Lord your God which I command you. That's pretty similar, isn't it? Language. Who was preaching this sermon? Moses, a Jew. Who was he preaching it to? Jews, the Jewish nation. Now, in the first part of the verse, he tells what he means because he says, that you may, middle of the verse. So, what do you do that you may keep the commandments according to the first part of the verse? You do not. Take away from it. You do not add to it. You do not take away from it. If you're going to keep the commandments, it's not just, I keep the commandment, but I've added something. No, if you keep the commandments, what Moses meant by that was, you don't add and you don't take away. Would that be a correct deduction or not? Look at chapter 5. Turn over to chapter 5. Okay, look at verse 32. First part of the verse. Is that 5:32 much like Matthew 28:20? You shall observe to do just as the Lord your God has commanded you. In Matthew 28:20, teach them to observe all that I commanded you. That's pretty similar, isn't it? Now, what does that entail according to the rest of that verse? Do what? Don't turn aside to the right or the left. That's what it means to keep God's commandments. You shall walk in all the ways the Lord your God has commanded you. So here we are under the new covenant, and our Lord says to these apostles, you teach them to observe all that I commanded you. What does that mean? So, I don't know why God made some of the commands he did. I don't have to know. He's all wise. He's all loving. He's all powerful. I don't know why he told people to be baptized in water. I don't know. I just know he did. And so, why don't we tell you what? Let's add a little bit. We'll baptize in water. And we'll get out, and then we'll get some water. We'll call it holy water, and we'll sprinkle it on them. That'd be okay, huh? It helps sanctify them. We'll give it a religious significance. What's wrong with it? Where does the Bible forbid it? Tell me where the Bible forbids it. It doesn't forbid it. It just doesn't authorize it as a religious service, a religious act for the purpose of sanctification or something like that. Just like the washing of your hands in the vessels in Matthew 15. So this is a ploy that Satan uses to justify the use of instrumental music. Now, Keith raised up a good point that we're going to talk about, but we're not right now. We're going to sing a couple of verses of another song. Josh, will you come lead us in that song, please, sir? All right. We've got time to look at one more. Oh, I got one more point on this one that we were talking about God doesn't forbid it. Let's say you're discussing this with a Baptist. And so you ask your Baptist friend, do y'all baptize babies? What are they going to tell you? Anybody here have a background in Baptist? They do not. Well, I say, why not? The Bible doesn't say not to baptize babies, does it? So, isn't it okay, Mr. Baptist friend, to baptize babies? What's he going to say?
No.
He understands what we're talking about. You see? So, you're talking to any denominations. And so you say, I believe in Jesus, but I also believe it's okay to pray through Mary as our mediator. Let's say it's a Methodist. Let's say it's a Presbyterian. Will they agree? No. So what's your response to prove it's okay? Does the Bible forbid praying to Mary? Is there a thou shalt not pray to Mary somewhere in the Bible? No. But the mediator is specified, isn't it? Jesus Christ is our mediator. So your Presbyterian friend, your Methodist friend, they understand this concept. That makes sense? So, I tell you what, now, unfortunately, some churches would say, hey, that's a good idea, I hadn't thought about this one. I tell you what we're going to do today, we're tired of singing these old songs, we're going to sing Home on the Range. Y'all like Home on the Range? Would it be okay to sing Home on the Range in our worship service? Oh, you old fuddy-duddies, where does the Bible say you can't sing Home on the Range in worship? Where is it forbidden? Come on, folks.
It doesn't.
Well, why do you not sing those kind of songs? Psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs are specified.
Praise.
What?
It doesn't bring praise.
Well, yeah, we're going to praise God.
I'm talking about that specific song.
Okay, but you know what I'm doing, though, Michael, is I'm thanking God because I live on a range. I don't live in Houston. The kind of music is specified, isn't it? Psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. So, political songs, just songs we like to sing for fun. You know, Old MacDonald Had a Farm, how about that one? Row, row, row your boat. Something we can have fun, a lot of fun. It doesn't have to say thou shalt not. If God's authority is specific about some particular thing, and it is about the kind of music we use in worship. It was vocal music, and the kind of music was psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. And so, people might say, that's a Church of Christ argument. No, that's an argument you yourself believe in. That's just a logical argument. And I guarantee you, Stephen would tell you about it if you used his credit card that way. Sure. So anyway, just to illustrate how sometimes we think we're stumped because people ask us questions we can't answer, when actually there's a very real and easy answer to that question. Okay.
Grant, in regards to why...
You going to make an argument for it? Oh, okay.
I'm going to give an explanation. The reason why I brought it up is because the person I was dealing with grew up in the Church of Christ. Also, their grandfather was a preacher. It is, probably not more, but it preached, and they fell away. But that was the argument. They weren't using instruments of music as in pain, they're using it as an accompaniment, but Bible does not speak against it, and so they used the tactics like I was using a second ago. Now, I agree with you. I think that Matthew 15, Deuteronomy 4 is a great one that I did think of to argue with at the time, but the thing is that it's not just about congregations. If we don't understand the concepts here in the local work, then it's easy to be preyed upon and torn away.
Look at number 8 on your lesson. That's where we're going to deal with more of what Peter. I believe his name is Keith. What Keith brought up. So I'm glad Keith brought that up because he showed that we need to be prepared for that kind of thing. That's good. But we're not going to get to it today. But look at number 8. Instrumental music is an aid, like an overhead projector or songbooks. So somebody will say, y'all don't believe in instrumental music, but y'all got this overhead projector here y'all use. Is that in the Bible? Is it?
No.
How about songbooks? Y'all ever read about songbooks in the New Testament church?
No.
Well, there you are. You're arguing. Now, here's where you got to be careful. They say, you're arguing silence forbids. Are we?
No.
No. We're saying silence doesn't authorize.
Electricity back then either.
Well, but they had books. They had books. So, and Paul had charts, by the way. Bring the parchments. Maybe he rolled up charts or something. I don't know what he used. But anyway. All right, so we'll get to that when we get to that question. All right, let me see if I got time here in about 5 minutes to deal with any of these others. That was number 6. Oh, yes. No. We can start on this one, I guess. We're not going to get to the end of it. Number 6 on your lesson. Look at number 6 on your lesson. We've got a few minutes here. I think we can cover more of this because we've got an audience here that's got some Bible knowledge, but there are some things we want to cover we probably won't get to tonight. But so somebody said, I do believe in following the Bible. And in the Old Testament, God, they worship God with mechanical instruments of music, harps, those kind of things, instruments. And God was pleased with it. Is that correct? So that shows God is pleased with worshiping Him in this manner. So most everybody here, I know maybe how your first response would be. Let's see how close I am. What would be your first response? That's the old law. We're not under the old law. And I don't know where you would go. There's several places you can go. Look at Hebrews chapter 8. And... you know, Josh is asking for verses in his class, and this person will say that, and this person will say that, and maybe both of them are good. So you may have other verses that you would use, but there's a number you could use. But look at Hebrews chapter 8. And this one is particularly interesting because look who it's written to. Hebrews. People whose ancestors were under the law. And if they're older people, they too may have been under the law if they lived before Christ died on the cross. But note in chapter 8, verse 7, he talks about a first and a second covenant. A first covenant and a second covenant. And he talked about the fault with the first covenant. That's the Old Testament, as we call it. And the faults he details was, you had to live without sin or you're condemned. And they couldn't. God made a second covenant, which is what we call the New Testament. All right, so at least that shows there's a first and a second. God saw fit to come with a second covenant. And if you have time, you can read the rest of this text. It's interesting about that. But look at chapter 9, verse 1. Under the first covenant, they had regulations of divine worship. They had laws for how to worship under the first covenant. And in that first covenant, there was a tabernacle. What's a tabernacle? It's a tent. They had a tabernacle prepared. In this tabernacle was 10 rooms, right? How many? Two rooms, right? He talks about that. The outer one, in which the lampstand, the table, the sacred bread, this is called the holy place. Behind the sacred veil, there was a tabernacle, which is called the Holy of Holies. There's another room. So, under the Old Testament, if you were one of those men that you read about in Exodus that's going to build this tabernacle, you say, man, two rooms is not very much. I think I'll add a room. Be okay? God didn't say that don't build three rooms. You build two rooms. And you build them exact size, as was pointed out, under the first covenant. They had regulations. This God we're talking about, please, he had regulations of divine worship. And he said, in the first room, there were certain pieces of furniture. You couldn't put anything you wanted in there. So, did he say, don't put a couch in there? You know, priest, I'm tired today. I'll take a nap. I'll cut me a couch right here. No. But there were regulations of divine worship about the kind of furniture went in that first room, which he talks about here in this text. Lampstand, a table. This is called the holy place. Okay, then there's the second room, the golden altar of incense, the Ark of the Covenant, so forth. So, that's in the first covenant. Now, look at chapter 10. And by the way, if we're going to let the old covenant be our authority for worship, could we build a tent, have two rooms, and have somebody be our priest to go into the second room once a year? And offer sacrifice for us? Huh? I'm not talking about going to heaven. I'm talking about a tent. A tent. A tabernacle. They had it under the first covenant, and the high priest went in that second room once a year to offer atonement for the people. If it was pleasing to God then, wouldn't it be pleasing to God today? No. People recognize that. Because something was done under the first law doesn't mean it's okay under the second covenant. They had priests, they had sacrifices, etc. All right, look over chapter 10. Look at verse 9. So John made reference to the fact of Christ's coming, which is true. And he said in verse 9, I come to do your will. Now, what did he do according to the rest of verse 9 with that first covenant? Took away the first. You mean all the copies were gone? Is that what that means? What does it mean, take away the first? It's no longer the covenant you live by and worship God by and serve God by. See? In order to establish the second. By this will. What's this will? The second, right? By this will we have been sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. So that's one at least. And I've got here in my notes, we don't have time to read it, but 2 Corinthians 3, 6-11, Paul discusses the old law. He calls it the letter that kills. And the new covenant. In contrast, though, say we're ministers of the new covenant. Look at Galatians chapter 6. This is one more verse and we'll bring our class to a close. Galatians chapter 6. Under the old law, You say, is it still effective? Is it still valid as a law at the time the Galatian letter was written? If it was, and you wanted to be right with God and you're a male, what do you have to experience? Circumcision. That was required under the law, the first covenant. But look what he writes to the Galatian Christians. He said, neither is circumcision anything nor uncircumcision, but a new creation. Well, then I can't be part of Israel. In fact, you will be part of Israel. People make the mistake that when they read in the New Testament, Israel, that's national Israel. It's not. Look, those who walk by this rule, peace and mercy be upon them and upon the what? Israel of God. You're God's chosen nation today. You've not been circumcised. You're God's chosen nation by faith in Jesus Christ. And so here again, you see, here's an Old Testament law. You could be excommunicated if you didn't practice circumcision. But they're not under that law anymore. And one more, I told you one more. Look at Colossians chapter 2. Have you ever seen anybody arrested for spitting on the sidewalk in downtown? You haven't? You know there used to be laws about that? That wrong to spit on the sidewalk, violation of the law? Why do you think people are not arrested for that anymore? It's not a law anymore. Right. And so look at Colossians 2, 16. No one is to act as your judge, that is to condemn you for not doing these things in regard to food or drink. Were there laws about food or drink under the Old Testament? You like ham? Could you eat ham under the Old Testament? No. There was laws about food and drink. In respect to a festival, do you celebrate a feast? First, or some special occurrence every new moon in the month? They did. You don't want anybody to judge you if you don't do that. Well, that was the end of the law. How about the festival? Have you done the Feast of Booths? Have you done that one? Have you been to Jerusalem, guys, 3 times a year? That's what the old law said. Our Sabbath day. Uh-oh, Stephen's in trouble. He told me he'd been working 8 hours on Saturday. The Bible says you rest on Saturday. Right? Under the old law. And so, because something was commanded or okay under the old law, it doesn't necessarily mean. It may be an indication of something, you gather the fact, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's the way it ought to be done today. Right? Under the old law, if a man was found to be an idolater, what was done with him? Stoned him to death. Y'all got your stones ready? And so this is a good passage. He said these were a mere shadow of what is to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. So we just touch the hem of the garment on this one because they're going to come with a rebuttal where they're going to play Keith Settle. And they're going to say, but hey, Psalms are not part of the law. And in the Psalms, you are encouraged to use mechanical instruments in worshiping God. And it is true. Well, look at that. In the Psalms, you are encouraged. Whoever that psalm is written to, that's another misnomer that everybody brought their harp to the temple. That's not what happened. It was the Levitical tribe who used instruments. That's another study. But be that as it may, there is encouragement to use your mechanical instruments in praise to God in the psalm. So now what do I do? This guy said, that's not part of the law. The law, I agree, the law is passed. The Psalms are not part of the law. But our time's up. So I'm going to quit there. We'll talk about that. Thank y'all for coming. I know this may not be the easiest type of study, but it's something that can equip you. First of all, just to have confidence in what you believe. Is it correct? Is it Church of Christ doctrine? Is that all it is? Is it family tradition, or is it an effort to understand, use the laws of language? Why would we use the laws of language? Because that's how God communicated to us. And so to use the law of language is an effort to ascertain His will.